Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Valiant Sunday episode, and today's episode is a spotlight on one of, if not the most well-known Valiant antagonist, I'll say. I don't know if he's a hero. I don't know if he's a villain. He certainly stirs the pot, and we'll be talking about all that. And I'm joined by my co-host, Manny, as usual. And we also have a guest, someone I know from the Valiant fan forums, someone I consider to be an expert on all things Valiant. Jesse, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's a great pleasure to be here, man.
Great. So for those of you not familiar, Toyo Harada, as I mentioned, made his first appearance in the second iteration of the Harbinger series, Harbinger Volume 2, Number 1, written by Joshua Dysart. So, you know, we can't really say that Josh created the character because he did draw from a lot of the previous iteration. You know, when Valiant Entertainment launched and they kind of reimagined these characters, they did want them to be, you know, recognizable from their previous iterations. But in my mind, Josh really elevated the character. He made him much more sophisticated, much more complicated, much more hard to pin down as far as, is he a good guy, is he a bad guy? Not that there weren't some of those elements in the first Toyo Harada with Valiant, the first go-round, but that villain to me was a little more of a mustache twirler than this one. So as I mentioned, Joshua Dysart was the writer on Harbinger Volume 2, Number 1. Pencils on that issue and inks as well were by Kari Evans, and colors were by Ian Hanin. So just a brief history for those who aren't familiar. Toyo Harada, when we meet him, he's the CEO of Harada Global Conglomerate. So he's a businessman, if you will. And he's perceived by the world as a force of good. You know, his company, while certainly a Fortune 500 company and making him lots of money, he's very much a philanthropist. He seems to be doing things as far as trying to find a way to produce clean energy and things in the medical field and doing things for a green planet. And it seems like he's one of the good guys, right? Clearly, he's making money, one of the richest, most powerful men in the world. But the general public sees him as a force for good. Unbeknownst to the general public, he's actually been guided by decades by this mysterious figure known as the Bleeding Monk. And Harada is what's known as a Psyot. And I'm sure most of you listening to the podcast familiar with Valiant know that that's kind of the Valiant Universe version of a mutant in Marvel Universe terms. So someone who's born with these powers, and Harada's powers have to do with psionics. He can control people's minds. He can make them see things that aren't there or not see things that are there. He has telekinesis. He can fly. He's what's known as an Omega level Psyot, which means he's one of the most powerful minds on the entire planet, if not the whole entire universe of Valiant. So he's very powerful, and he's building an army. He has a vision for the world, a vision for the way the world should go. You know, he was born before World War II. He was there when the bombs were dropped on Japan. He lost his mother during that. His father fought in the Second World War. He lost his mother when those bombs were dropped. He never wants to see that happen again. That's kind of when his power activated, the trauma of that event. And he kind of comes into his own. He starts learning about the nature of humanity, at least as far as he sees it, in those horrible days following the bomb being dropped, and food and resources and clean water and just the ability to live. You know, all those things were very scarce at that time in that place. And so that kind of shaped him. That shaped his formative years, and it shaped his outlook on life. And it's part of the reason he probably feels like he needs to guide humanity into where they need to be. He knows better than everyone else in his own mind. He's seen the worst of humanity, and he wants to guide us into the future. The way he's doing that is in secret, while he's got this public face, this public head of this conglomerate, this multinational corporation. Behind the scenes, he's recruiting young kids who he believes have the latent ability to become Psyats themselves, he's going and he's kidnapping these kids a lot of times, or sometimes maybe he's going right through the front door and parents forget they ever had the kid, or he's going through the front door and convincing his parents, the parents of whatever child that has this ability to become a Psyat, that he's going to take this person and put them in a private school or train them to be his protege or whatever reason he's giving. He's not being on the up and up. And he's taking and he's trying to activate them through a series of torture, basically, because at this point in the Valiant universe, that's the only way to activate a Psyat as far as they know. And only 1 in 3 even survive the process. The other two usually don't. They usually die. Their head explodes or they just... their heart gives out, whatever. And then even of those that he activates, they don't always manifest powers that are useful. We saw that in the Secret Weapons miniseries, that there are some... he doesn't throw them away because he's gone through all this expense to bring them over to his side and have them hidden away. And so he goes through the trouble of activating them. And if they have a power that he can't take advantage of in a, you know, in a military way, or he doesn't see a distinct advantage right away, he kind of tucks them off to the side, puts them somewhere else in case maybe at some point they can be, I don't know, foot soldiers or cannon fodder at some point. So that's where Harad is kind of at when we meet him. Did you think I missed anything there, Jesse? That's where he's kind of at.
No, it's fairly easy. There's the original version was a little bit more mustache twirling, more Dr. Claw, you know, I'll get you gadget, you know, next time kind of. He was actually did have a little bit of a dimension to him. It's important to note that he first appeared in Solar Man of the Atom issue 3. It was back in 1992, and then that so. They had ideas for him long before the rest of the, you know, what he became ultimately occurred. But I think he's got a good picture on it, and it'll open the floor for some good discussion for sure.
And then something else I want to mention. So as that Harbinger series, the 25 issues of that Joshua Dysart wrote initially, that story, we also saw a lot of flashbacks in those issues of during the 60s and 70s as Harada was rising to power as this global conglomerate businessman. And he was often at odds with another tech company, Psyat Industrial Complex, if you will, PRS, Project Rising Spirit. So they were at odds. There were flashbacks. They were always aware. They knew Harada had these powers. And they were kind of like, almost like an Illuminati kind of situation where the kind of the power behind the throne, if you will, is with governments and different people of power in the world. So there were always frictions there. Now, the first time in the new Harbinger universe where we really see friction and we really see kind of the military aspect or the ability to go to battle of Harada and his team is in the first Harbinger War crossover. They had some children that PRS, much like Harada, PRS was kidnapping children that had the ability to become Psyats and activating them. So some of them were able to escape. Bloodshot got involved. Harada got involved because he wanted those assets for himself. We also saw the Renegades get involved, which the leader of the Renegades being Pete Stanchek, maybe the one Psyat in the Valiant universe that's Harada's equal in terms of raw power, certainly not in the ability to use that power or the experience in using that power. But as far as raw potential, perhaps Pete might be the one equal that Harada has. And so at the end of the day, Harada exposed himself somewhat. Certainly, it showed the Renegades, Pete Stanchek, and his band, what Harada was capable of if they didn't already suspect. And it moved us further down the path of what's Harada really after? What's he willing to do? We see that he's willing to go to war for what he thinks is best as long as he can stay behind the scenes. And I think that Pete Stanchek and his band of Renegades, as the story in the first 25 issues of Harbinger play out, their idea is to expose him. And maybe it's not the best idea, right, Manny? Maybe it's not the best idea because they eventually are able to basically release all of Harada's computer network. They're able to expose that to the public so anyone can read about what Harada's really been up to. But it doesn't exactly turn out for them the way they think, right, Manny?
No, yeah, you're completely right. No, it doesn't.
I mean, I'm not sure what they're thinking. I mean, keep in mind they are young teenage kids, and maybe they're just thinking, okay.
Yeah, you're kind of impulsive a little bit, yeah, you know.
Right, and maybe they're thinking, hey, we're going to expose this guy, and he's a bad guy, and he'll just go away. That's not what happens
well,
at all.
It's naive. No, it's completely naive. You know, they have a great idea. You know, hey, let's stop this because we don't agree with it. But they lack the wisdom and the follow through and the planning, long-term planning to make it, you know, right, to actually come up with a better solution. They can't, they don't have a solution. It's just expose them. Yay, we expose them. Great. Now what?
Right. So he's got that mask ripped away. His facade has been destroyed. I mean, they were completely successful.
And nobody, if you think about it, really, nobody has, nobody's more dangerous than somebody who has nothing to lose.
And not only did Harada lose that illusion that he had, as far as the general public was concerned, but he lost a lot of assets too. You know, a lot of people felt betrayed. A lot of his businesses, you know, they had offices around the world. A lot of them were attacked and firebombed, assets destroyed, and he was on the run. He was on the run. So what he eventually did was he took over a U.S. naval aircraft carrier, took over a patch of ground in Somalia, said, I claim this land in the name of myself, basically, and I'm calling it the Foundation, and it's going to be the first society where there is no hunger, there is no disease, there is no inequality, you know, kind of almost like a socialist kind of system. And the world was not about to stand for that, but Harada was powerful enough, even in this weakened state, that he was able to get a foothold. He was able to stave off the attacks. He was able to outthink and outmaneuver the powers that be and kind of establish his own little corner of the world. And I think that's kind of where we left off with Harada. And, you know, Josh Dysart took a break. He hasn't really worked on the character in a while. But we've got something forthcoming that we'll talk about in a little bit. So that's kind of a brief history of Harada. I mean, obviously, I'm glossing over like tons of details. And certainly, I highly recommend you go and read Harbinger for yourself. As I said, it's 25 issues. There's a couple of Zero issues in there as well. And then the story moves on to Harbinger Omega, which is 3 issues. And then into the Imperium storyline, which is 16 issues. So if you read those series, that chunk of books, that's 25, 28, 30, like 44 issues or so, you're going to be completely up to speed and understand everything there is to know, at least as far as a comic reader can, about Harada and about this character that Joshua Dysart has created, who he himself finds fascinating. I also recommend, for any of you that haven't listened to the interview I did with Josh at Long Beach Comic Con, a few years ago, I think it's episode 61. That's a fascinating listen. Josh and I specifically talk about Harada living in the gray area and some of the reasons Josh made the decisions he did with the character. And it's a really great interview. So I encourage you to go and listen to that. So Manny, is there anything that specifically that I did not mention? Any particular event that stands out to you, or any part of Harada's history that you want to mention?
No, you did a good job, but you know, giving us a good summary. You're good.
What about you, Jesse? Anything you want to highlight?
I guess it'd be very easy to say, in a sense, that Harada represents the perfect socialist ideology, in a sense, almost a very, very left leaning, politically aligned ideology that would work. You know, since he has the muscle power and the experience and the drive to make it happen. He has the power behind it. Whereas, like, you know, you look at PRS, which would be on the opposite end of the spectrum, more of a fascist, almost, you know, a corporate controlled regime. And so that's why oftentimes you're seeing these two vast polar opposites at odds with one another, because they are completely different ideologies. And this is a great medium in order for that to be discussed. Oftentimes, I think that this is as Josh has said in the past, it's wish fulfillment. He gets to make his thoughts, his ideas come to life on paper. You know, and so it's a very unique situation because it's very relevant to today.
So Harada is the socialist and Pyrrhus is the fascist. We're going to come back to that. I have a few comments about that. We'll come back to that. But first, I just want to mention the powers. I did talk about, you know, how he's one of the most powerful minds in the Valiant universe. So he has that telepathy. He has the ability to communicate just with thought. And going beyond that, he has the ability to actually control people's minds, as I said, the ability to make them forget that they even forget their own name, forget who they are, forget that they're seeing Harada, completely, you know, blind them. He has telekinesis, so he can move things with his mind. As I said, he can fly himself just through the power of his own mind. He's got the ability to create illusions and project those illusions. So again, you know, the ability to make himself invisible or make people see things that aren't there or forget things they have seen. So, but it's all mental with him. It's all mental. And beyond that, when I talk about mentality, forget about the powers, you know, the superhuman powers that he has. Beyond that, he has a genius level intellect. You know, the guy is an incredible inventor, an incredible innovator. It's not just through acquiring things on the sly, whether it be, you know, alien technology or technology from other dimensions that, you know, he may steal from PRS, or he may have access to Vine technology, one of the alien species in the Harbinger universe. Beyond that, he's able to create things himself. I think Sunlight and Snow, Mech Major, one of the characters in the Imperium story, is kind of an example of that. He doesn't always do it on his own. Clearly, he surrounds himself with a lot of other smart people as well. But let's not sell the guy short and say he's just this giant Professor X type character. He also is an incredible scientist in his own right, with the ability to grasp a lot of concepts that the you know, average citizen, they're just not going to understand. So that he has that power as well. As far as weaknesses for his power, he does need downtime once in a while. We saw that in Harbinger, that, you know, Harada, he doesn't really sleep, and it's go 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 all the time. And if he doesn't have a chance to kind of check out and go into this kind of sensory deprivation tank, that he can be subject to what's called mind squalls. And it's basically just his power lashing out uncontrollably. We've seen it cause both physical and mental damage to the people and buildings surrounding him. It was a huge event when it went down. At one point in Harbinger, he was keeping the renegades prisoner and trying to project an illusion to each of their minds to convince them that they weren't actually prisoners, and keeping that going 24/7 while doing all these other things to keep his empire running, and wasn't taking time to take care of himself and go into that deprivation state. And it ended in a mind squall, which you know, destroyed one of his office buildings and killed a lot of his people that were working for him. So that is his one limitation. Am I missing anything, guys? Anything else that I left out?
No, I think we're up to speed on that, man.
All right. Now for the main question here. The title of the podcast is Harada, a Hero or Villain? What are his motivations? Why is he doing what he's doing? You know, I mentioned in his history about spending his formative years in that horror that was Japan after the first atomic bombs had been dropped. So clearly that has an effect, and that colors his outlook on life. And I also mentioned I wanted to go back to something Jesse said about PRS being the fascist and Harada being the socialist. And I'm not going to necessarily agree or disagree, but I do just want to point out that I think it was early on in Imperium when Harada has had his back pushed against the wall, Harada himself, you know, now that he has been forced to take action, he's come out of hiding, he's forcibly trying to create this foundation area. He calls himself a fascist, and he blames the world for forcing him into that position because the renegades outed him, so to speak. So is that the case, Jesse? Let me put it directly to you. Is that the case that he was more a socialist when he got to stay in hiding, but now that he's actually out there for the world to see, that he's now a fascist? Or do you still see him as a socialist?
Well, you got to think about his actions are what makes him a socialist and what his ultimate end state goal is. You see, his end state goal is not to govern just to govern. His end state goal is not just to have power for the sake of power. His end state goal is to benefit humanity and the people and create a utopian world where all people can, you know, different races and creeds and religions can all live in harmony together and then usher into the next generation of, you know, of humanity. He's not really looking, as a typical fascist would to retain power and conquer and just for the sake of expanding an empire. He actually wants to benefit humanity, which is, you know, essentially oftentimes what we see as the socialist goal to begin with. That being said, there's always a very thin line, between a Joseph Stalin and an Adolf Hitler, you know, both different ends of the spectrum. And yeah, oh my gosh, you know, they both had very similar disastrous results.
So I agree with you to a point. And what's interesting, and again, this goes back to the conversation that Josh and I had. And I think for listeners, if you're not familiar with this story, or if you want to kind of dive deep into Harada, as far as what his motivations might be and kind of get on the same page with what we're discussing here, Imperium issue 1 is very interesting as a tool for that, because the first half of the issue starts out kind of with what Harada's idea of that idealized future would be. And much like Jesse said, he's not, and I don't think he ever wants power for the sake of power or wants to guide humanity for the sake of power. But I will say the guy does have an ego. He's going to have no problem with helping to usher in this golden age like we see in the first half of that issue. And then being revered for it, and then being able to take credit for it. Not overtly, but I think there's some of that to him. Would you agree, Manny?
Yeah, I would. Just to continue the thought process between him being a socialist or a fascist, I think it also has to do with his public perception. Because in the beginning, you know, everything was under wraps, and he was really able to do whatever he pleased, kind of. And then now, after everything's been revealed, his hand is forced, because his belief in his utopia is so strong, he's gonna do whatever it takes to achieve it. In early on, we see him trying to assemble this team of psyops and training and just putting together a team to continue his mission. While as Imperium, it gets a little bit more desperate. He's put together a team of kind of misfit, dangerous monsters and people that are going to do whatever he wants, and it's just to accomplish his goal, whether anyone else likes it or not. So I think it's all with him in the forefront. He's the main one. He's front and center all the time. So, I think it's both. But I think his main focus, I would call him a socialist.
All right, let's step back for a minute. Can we all agree? And I mean, this may not be as simple a question as it is just to ask. But can we all agree that society, that version of the world that we see in Imperium 1, that's what he's going for? I mean, do we believe that, or do we think that Harada is just showing that to his troops at that time to motivate them? Or do we believe that that's actually his goal? Or do we buy that, Jesse?
I think that, yeah, that is what, or a loose version of what you would want. As we, it would take some time to accomplish that, of course, and there's no guarantee it would be an exact carbon copy of that. But I think at this point in time, that is what he would aspire for, and that's why he would put it into the minds like that. I don't think he was trying to fool anybody. He was trying, obviously, to energize them as they prepared for battle or prepared to, you know, execute his vision. You know, this is what you can be. This is who you can be, you know. But he's not, you know, he can't predict the future.
Right.
I think that's what his intention is. And I think that if he was given the opportunity, that the future would look similar to that in many respects, though it may not be exact.
Okay. And what about you, Manny? Are you buying it? You don't think he's just blowing smoke?
No, I'm completely buying it. I think he has the same type of ego kind of as Lex Luthor, who he doesn't really care if he's a villain or not. He kind of wants the glory. You know, part of his problem has always been the fact that Superman looks down on him. But we saw in a little bit in after Forever Evil that when he started getting some of that hero glory, he kind of changed his tune for a little bit. And I think Toru Harada, in the he kind of wants the same thing. If his ego is part of what's feeding him to create this utopia, because he's going to be the man on top. He's going to be the one who everybody obviously follows, because he's the one who made the world a better place. So, of course he's trying to, motivate his soldiers, but I think in his mind, he's going to save the world.
Okay. For me, I'm going to go ahead and buy it too. You know, I'm going to take it with a grain of salt, just because, like anything, I want to always hedge my bets because I don't want to be wrong. But especially for the purposes of this discussion, let's say that I buy it. This is Harada's vision for the future. A future where there is no disease, there is no poverty, there is no hunger. Everybody has the ability to be a Psyot, and it's not forced on anyone. Rather, those that choose to have their powers activated, which I think in the story it says something like 12% or something like that, choose to serve. And so let's say, you know, I'll go ahead and agree. I'll say I'm buying that. What's interesting to think, okay, so this is the world, this is the utopia he wants to create. And as Jesse said, it's going to take a long time to get there. So let's start talking about why. Why does he want that world? And it's not an easy, I don't think it's an easy question to answer at all, but let's talk specifically about motivation, because I think in trying to answer the question about is Harada a hero, is he a villain, it goes to that motivation. This may be the most important question of all. So go ahead, Jesse, what do you think? What's his driving force?
Well, all right, there's a lot here. Well, first of all, how long has humanity been around? Like 50,000, 100,000? Who knows how many years we've been around? Yet none of us have ever been able to achieve a utopia. We've had some of the, you know, the smartest men that have ever existed have still not been able to accomplish it. You know, you can go to any college campus in America and sit down at a coffee shop and talk to people and listen to them solve the world's problems, and yet they can't accomplish it. Because There's a lot of factors in there. There's religious problems. There's political problems. There's regional problems, agricultural problems, financial problems, mental problems, generational problems. You name it. And so to bring all that together is no small feat. It may not actually be possible. Certainly not possible without a little bit of as Harada would have to do, cracking some eggs from time to time. I mean, every nation on earth, has standing armies. Every nation that has borders did so because they conquered something. It's part of the game that is humanity. So, the fact that he would have this vision that he could accomplish in a matter of decades or even a generation or two is amazing, because he would have accomplished more than any man in human history.
So, why does he want to do it, though? Is it for ego? Is it so that he can say, I was the one man that finally was able to do it?
I think that that's probably part of it. Or maybe part of it is that he knows that he is the one man that can do it. You know, we watch Spider-Man and they say with great power comes great responsibility. Well, that's a fact. And what if that great power was more than just the ability to stop a couple burglars in New York? What if the ability was to usher in the new era of humanity and bring it around to the age of Aquarius? You know, I think he recognizes that he's lived a long time. He's seen a lot of things. He knows a lot. He can look into the deep, dark, far reaches of the human psyche. He can see what the political leaders of the earth have thought and what they really think and what they versus what they say and what their true motivations are. And when you break it down, he essentially knows more than any other human being alive as a result of this. Yeah. And so he knows, you know, that he's the one to do it. Now, is there some glory to that? Yes, absolutely. Is there a narcissism to that? Probably, yes. But then you have to ask yourself the question, does that narcissism outweigh the good that is brought about by his actions? If humanity is the better for it, then who cares how he felt? Or why, you know, that's what it boils down to. He saw his people destroyed. He sees what many of us, you and I, or, you know, Joe Smith in a coffee shop can see. They can see the technological advances. They can see the progress trap that is developed. They can see the impending doom coming. They can see the nations rising up against each other and smart weapons and invincible nuclear weapons and, you know, biological weapons and hunger here. And they can see all this, but, you know, he sees it too. And he sees that he has the ability to prevent that, to stop that, to redirect the course of humanity. And it's not Bloodshot that's got that vision. It's not Sting who's got that vision. It's Harada that's got that vision. So I think it's a combination of a little bit of narcissism or a lot of narcissism mixed with the reality of with great responsibility, great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to think about it. As you're describing that, I'm thinking, you know, a lot of times when you ask people, mountain climbers, hey, why did you climb that mountain? What, you know, the first one, you're the first one to ever climb this mountain. Why did you climb it? Because it was there. Because I could. Because I wanted to challenge myself. Because it's human nature, right? To challenge yourself and to reach beyond and to want to be something more than you can be. So, I mean, again, when I ask this question about motivation, I know it's a complex question, and Harada's a complex character, maybe one of the most human characters, even though he's a Psyot, one of the most human characters that exists in the Valiant universe. Joshua Dysart did such a great job of creating this character. And so for me, what is that motivation? Is it because, as Jesse said, he saw the brokenness, he saw the worst in humanity after the bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, and he wants to make sure that never happens again. He looks around in the world and sees the inequality and sees the unfairness and sees the injustices that a lot of us see every day in the real world, and we have no power to fix that, but Harada does. That's the difference. He has the difference. He has the power to make a difference and to make a change. And he's going to look beyond the small injustices and, you know, maybe the individual injustices to try to steer the world to a place where it will be better for all. So, yeah, maybe some innocent people get sacrificed along the way. Maybe there are some eggs broken to create the omelet of utopia. But in Harada's mind, I don't even necessarily think he stops to ask himself, why am I doing it? He's simply capable of doing it. He has the power. And he doesn't stop to ask himself why. He just feels that this is what needs to be done. And it's almost a flip side of Sting, of Pete Stanchek, who has, you know, nearly the same level of power, if not the same level of power, and instead chooses to take himself off the board, instead chooses to use those powers to be hidden, who instead chooses to remove himself instead of... So it's a great look at two different perspectives of someone who has this power, and one of them is embracing it and seizing it and really taking control of the power in a way to use it as a tool rather than let the power use them. And I think in Pete's case, the power is using him. The power is dictating the course of Peter's life. You know, I'm going to hide because I this power just is too much for me to handle. I'm just going to retreat from it. I'm going to self-medicate. I'm going to hide at the bottom of a river or whatever it might be. And Harada's saying, no, I, the person, the ego, the id, himself as a person, what separates him, remove the Psyot powers. What he is as a person will take those powers and use it as he sees fit, rather than letting the powers dictate to him. That's just the way that I see it. And again, I don't know that we can get to the motivation of Harada if we can really pin it down, because it is so complex. It is such a tough question. And I feel at the end of the day that Harada himself may not even completely understand why. You know, you could ask him the question, well, why are you doing this? And he would give you an answer. Well, because A leads to B. Okay. So why do you need to do B? Because B leads to C. He would go down the path of giving you all these practical reasons. But when you finally got down to the actual essence of it, why are you doing it? I don't even know that he could answer. You know, was it because the bleeding monk told him that he could? Was it because he just fancies himself as the one person that's capable of doing this, as Jesse said? You know, perhaps. But I almost feel like his formative years growing up in that situation, losing his father so early, losing his mother so early, something is broken in Harada in a way. And maybe that's the motivation. That he realizes on some unconscious level that there's something broken in him that he'll never be able to fix, but maybe he can make sure that that never happens to another person. Maybe that's the best answer I can give for motivation. What about you, Manny? What do you think? What's the essence of Harada's motivation for wanting this utopia like we saw in Imperium 1?
The great thing about this discussion is that I don't think neither of us can be wrong. Because it is a complex answer. The way I see it, my point of view, is because of his powers, because of his violent past experiences when he was younger, I think he has a perspective on the world that is very rare. And, more specifically, because of his powers, because of his telekinesis and being able to just gather so much more information about people in general. I think he has a point of view that kind of allows him to see that things are going to get worse. And I think Jesse's right when he's saying with great power comes great responsibility. It's the same. I think he feels a little bit of responsibility, to make the world a better place after what he's been through. I think that's part of it, of course, but I also think part of it also has to do with the fact that he's a little power hungry, like anybody else in his position could be. But it's a very, very difficult thing to do because there's so many others, nations, other groups that have different ideologies that will never just bend the knee to Toyo Harada like kind of he wants them to do. So to create that utopia, he does need to break eggs. He does need to do things that at the moment would be seen as very unjust, very fascist. And so in the overall scope of things, if he was to ever reach that goal, you could look back and say, man, he was right. It was worth it. But can you ever get there? That's the question, just because there's too much pull from different aspects of societies, whether it's, like it's been mentioned before, religion, other different types of politics. There's just so much involved that you can't just have one person rule the world, because there's immediately five others who want to overthrow him because they're power hungry, they believe they can do it better, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, I think he's trying I think he has it set in his mind that he's the only one who can save the world, and he's gonna do it in any means necessary.
So Jesse, let me ask you this: is, you know, throw out socialism, throw out fascism, is Harada a utilitarianism or a utilitarianist, I should say?
Well, 100% he is. I think about, and I think I brought up the point earlier today, actually, when I wrote, when you look at the characters in The Watchmen, right? You have Night Owl, I want to say, you have Rorschach, you have all these guys running around. They're trying to be superheroes, right? They're trying to fight crime, but they're not really making a lot of impact on the world. They're stopping a criminal here, or a rapist here, or a murderer. Yeah, they're doing that, but they're not really making a huge impact. And you have, on the other end, you have, I believe it's Adrian Veidt, who's the smartest man of the world, right? And he is completely a narcissist. He's a total maniac. He wanted to be greater than Alexander of Macedonia. He was his inspiration, you know. And he looks at fighting a person in the street as a waste of his time, because there's a much broader impact he can make through expanding his corporate resources, expanding his intellect, using social programs on a global level, and then ultimately he. You know, whether you're reading the comic or watching the movie, you know, he creates a situation that kills millions of people. It literally kills millions of people. And in the process, it brings humanity together and saves billions of people from stopping, a nuclear holocaust from occurring, from stopping World War III. And so if you look at him and compare these two characters side by side, Harada follows a very similar approach. It says he hasn't even gone that far. It could be argued that Adrian was really the only hero in The Watchmen, and likewise, albeit dirty, Harada's has been a hell of a lot more heroic than Pete has. Pete's popping pills and trying to expose things, great, but he's not really fixing the world. So I don't know, man.
Well, I guess in a way, so first I should say, for those of you who don't understand or aren't familiar with the concept of utilitarianism, it's the concept that whatever action that you perform needs to be for the greater number of people. So if you perform an action and it harms one person but benefits 10, then you should do it.
It was right action.
Exactly. So the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. To put it simply, but we can even take it more simple than that. Really, we can say something that all of us have heard: do the ends justify the means? Right. So if to get to this perfect world, to get to this utopia that Harada showed us in Imperium One, to get there, he's going to have to go to war. People are going to die. He's going to have to, fight militarily against all the nations of the world. He's going to have to fight on an economic level, on a social level. He's going to have to trample on some people's freedoms. He's going to have to exert his will and substitute his decision-making for the decision-making of individuals and world leaders and nations and maybe just about everybody on the planet. So, the question becomes, does that make him a hero, or does that make him a villain? What do you think, Manny?
Well, go for it, Manny.
I think it's that's a matter of an opinion. Depends on which side you want to stand.
Where are you standing, Manny?
Are you opposed to the way he's doing things, or are you with him and kind of see the bigger picture?
Okay, so where do you stand? Are you with him?
It's almost kind of like Magneto in a way. Like, you can see him as a villain sometimes, you can see him as a hero. I don't know.
Come on, you got to pick a side.
Look, this is my favorite Valiant character for that reason, for how complex he is. For me, Toru Harada is a hero.
Okay, fair enough. And is it for that reason? Because you think in the end, the end goal justifies whatever he has to do to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, and you know, it's, he was doing it in a way during Harbinger that was a lot less violent and a lot more toned down, but you know, he's trying to get things done. In Imperium, he's still doing the same thing, but now he's doing it in a faster, more violent way. I mean, he's on a carrier, with people like, you know, he has an alien with him. He has that, broken angel who's like doing all kinds of horrific, experiments on humans and stuff. And, you know, so he's trying to reach his goal, which is that utopia. And I mean, there's other teams, other valiant characters per se in general, they haven't, they're preventing crime, but nobody's necessarily trying to make the world a better place.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, you say in the Harbinger series, he was doing it and it wasn't as bad as what he was doing in Imperium. It wasn't as in your face. It wasn't destroying as many people's lives. And I agree with you to some extent, but guess what? If you're one of those kids with the latent power to be a Psyot and you get tortured into activation and your head explodes, I would argue that's just as bad as anything or how anyone is affected in Imperium for that one person. So again, I guess just to agree with what you were saying, when you started to answer the question, it's all about your perspective. All right, Jesse, what do you think? Hero or villain?
Oh, I'm going to go with a hard stance and say he is a hero. I also agree that it is a matter of perspective, you know, and the reality is this. Every hero that's ever existed was a villain to the person they opposed. I mean, if you really break it down. How do I put this? When he has his utopia and he's surrounded by people, they're not going to be talking about, oh my God, you horrible person. They're going to be saying, yay, you know, pop the fireworks, you know, the world is a better place. What the problem is that, you know, you go in and you conquer, you oust Saddam Hussein out of Iraq, right? You know, yay, we killed the dictator. And then 10 years later, you have something else emerge, you know, and it turns out the guy that everybody hated that we thought was a dictator was actually holding things in place because he understood the situation on the ground. Yeah, he's a jerk and he did horrific things. But at the same time, I'm not saying he was a hero, but he kind of held the region in check. If you look at the movie Hero with Jet Li that came out in 2002, it's a story about, you know, this horrific king who's going around and killing all these, you know, various regions and tribes and destroying the people and whatnot. But at the end of it all, at the end of the film, you know, spoilers if you haven't seen the movie, Jet Li discovers, wait, this guy actually has the right idea. He's uniting the people. And as it turns out, he sacrifices himself at the end, and that king was the first emperor of China. And the hero was, as it turns out, it could be taken either way, but it was Jet Li basically saying, hey, you know, let's unite our nation despite all the blood loss, despite all the atrocities, despite the slaughtering and the genocide and everything that had to happen to get there. You know, let's make one strong China. And, you know, that there it is. That's why he's a hero. You know, I guess if you're one of the victims of that, then you know, he's a villain. If you're one of the ones that benefits from that, he's a hero. It depends on how you look at it. Is he a villain like Jafar from Aladdin? Is he a villain like Mumra from Thundercats or Dr. Robotnik from Sonic the Hedgehog? No, he's not. That's absolutely one-dimensional, you know, clearly villain. Harada is a hero from a certain point of view, from his actions.
I think, well, first let me say, so that's your answer. Harada's a hero. You're good. I'm going to move on to my answer now, because I don't want you to leave anything out. This is good stuff.
No, Harada's a hero.
Okay.
But to be honest with you, I don't think anybody could probably do much better in terms of bringing in, trying to unite the world with that vision, based on the Valiant universe as we've seen it. Everybody else is kind of fumbling around trying to do their own thing, and he's the only one that's actually trying to ignite this place. I mean, we just read Exo Manowar, where he, you know, had a hard enough time trying to unite a different planet. Like, you know,
point I would agree with you on that, that Harada's doing as good a job as anybody could possibly do. And that goes to the point. Well, first of all, let me say you're both crazy. He's not a hero. He's a villain 100%. What are you guys talking about? Okay. From my perspective, and again, this is what's so great about the character that Joshua Dysart has created, right? That we could sit here and talk about this character for an hour-long podcast and probably not change each other's mind, but have a heck of a time doing it. And hopefully you listeners enjoy it as well. But from my perspective, it all comes down to choice and free will. And would I love to live in the utopia that's going to eventually emerge from Harada's ideals and the path that he set humanity on? Yes, I would. But first of all, there's no guarantee that Harada is infallible and the choices he's making and the path he sets humanity on is actually going to have that utopia come to pass. And wouldn't that be awful if we suffered through all this horrendous upheaval and then it didn't work anyway? Because as Jesse mentioned earlier, you know, you have different religions, you have different perspectives and different cultures and different ideas, and people are just, we're all unique and we're all different, and trying to unite that into one world and utopia, it very well may be impossible. I think it is impossible. And so to go through all this and have it not even actually happen, that's horrible to me. But even beyond that, even stepping back from that, even let's assume that Harada is infallible. Let's assume that everything he's doing will lead to that perfect utopia. I'm still of the mind that the price we're paying is too high. If even one person loses their ability to choose, if even one person loses their ability to govern and loses their free will and the ability to make their own choice, I think the price is too high. And why do I think that? Because what if I'm that one person? Don't I deserve? Because again, Harada's talking about equality, but yet through his actions, he's acting as the judge, and he's not, you know, out there singling out, you know, pointing, okay, you're going to suffer and you're not, you're going to die and you're not. He's not doing that. He's not to that extent, which is why he's not one of those mustache twirling villains. But it is unequal. It is, you know, luck of the draw. And so, as I said, it's fine to think that, yeah, Harada can get us to that place and, you know, the good of the many outweighs the good of the few, unless you're one of the few. And I just go back to thinking, what makes me any better than one of those people that suffered or got killed because of Harada's actions? And if I am one of those people that suffered and got killed, then, you know, I'm really not on Harada's side. So again, I mean, you're both right. You both said it's a matter of perspective. And I guess I'm always putting myself in the role of the underdog, or I'm always looking at the glasses half empty. And if this situation were happening in our world, I would be one of the ones that got screwed, and I'm just not willing to have that happen. I'd rather see Harada defeated. I'd rather see, you know, humanity, you know, make it or not make it, face extinction or not face extinction, all on its own merits, rather than some, you know, supposedly benevolent angel who's, you know, knows better than us and has the power to make the decisions for us and set us on the right path. I almost feel like if we can't get there on our own merits, then maybe we don't deserve it anyway. So that's where I come out on Harada. To me, he's a villain. I can certainly respect what he's trying to do. And I love that sometimes when I'm reading the story that Joshua Dysart has put before us, I find my thinking so aligned with what Harada is doing. And I find myself rooting for him. And again, that's the genius of the character and the genius of this story that Joshua Dysart is telling. Because even me, who sees Harada as a villain, sometimes finds myself rooting for Harada, and that's incredible. And now I'll give you guys a chance to tell me how wrong I am. All right, Jesse, go ahead.
Well, yeah, like I said, I don't think that you are wrong or right. I think that it is a perspective issue. I will say that if you were to peel back the veil that hides the actions of almost any nation on earth, you'd be very, very disappointed at what goes on.
Oh no, I know that that's the case. I know there's such horrors that go on, and I'm glad that I don't know. Because, you know, the depth of depravity of us.
If you were to bug the president's office or bug,
I know.
You know, Bernie Sanders' office or bug Ms. Clinton's office or bug, you know, Obama's office at the end of, and then go listen to those, you'd probably be like, oh my God. And you start pulling your hair out from any of them.
Yes, I agree.
It's just how this world works. I can also say that it is very, very difficult. And very, very long to make change come about peacefully over time. In fact, it won't usually happen in a lifetime or two or three. And so if you have an individual that has the ability and the vision, they're operating behind with the clock ticking in their face. You know, if you're only going to live for, say, 70 or 80 years, you got to get that stuff done before your death. You can't trust this to go on to the next generation necessarily, although yet at the same time, you kind of have to trust it to go on to the next generation. The clock's going to run out and you're going to have somebody else who may or may not have the same exact understanding or vision or application that you did. And in which case you end up with, you know, a declining society that you created after you're gone. It's a difficult, complex geopolitical and social reality that our planet has. So I see him as a hero simply because I would see, you know, the world that he could build, you know, if, based on Imperium. I mean, just in a matter of weeks, he takes a failed state and turns it into like the shining beacon of hope in Africa. You know, so if that can happen so quickly, then, you know, with the right resources and follow through, then it could be the second coming of Alexander the Great, who himself wasn't really that great.
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely give it to Harada. He does cut through some red tape. You know, he doesn't mess around. You almost wish that we could have somebody like that who maybe not to the extreme. But, you know, what could they do? What could Harada do as president of the United States, right?
Right, right. You know, I mean, you look at situations in Syria. You look at situations with Boko Haram in Western Africa. You look at genocide that's occurred in parts of the Middle East and going into Southeast Asia. And, you know, if an individual can go in there and kill 100 people to stop the massacre of millions, to stop the kidnapping and sexual trafficking and everything else that goes on, you know, you might scratch your head for a second and say, oh, good Lord, this dude's a hero.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
But those 100 people certainly wouldn't.
Eating a bit of my own words. Manny, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. So why am I wrong? Why is he not a villain?
I mean, for me, it comes down as simple as, I mean, it sounds really simple the way I'm just going to put it. Is, you know, war has winners and losers. There's people all still in southern parts of the United States that do not accept the Civil War. You know, to them, you know, the South will rise again, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's in any situation, there's always going to be a group of people who feel like they got the short end of the stick. There's always going to be a group of people who feel like they got screwed, but it was all for the greater good. And if you can't see that, then that's kind of too bad. So I think he's doing what he can with his abilities. Something that, as Jesse very well pointed out, Exo tried to do on the planet. And failed miserably, not because necessarily he wasn't physically strong enough, but he didn't have the brains for it. Because there was a whole lot more to the ruling planet than just being the strongest. Which is why I stand by my thought that, you know, he's a hero.
You guys actually did a pretty good job of making me almost change my mind. I realize as you're talking, Manny, it's like, okay, so I'm not seeing him as a hero because I'm not willing to let even one person be harmed by Harada's actions, but I don't know that I stop to consider the people that are harmed by Harada's choice of inaction if he were to take that path. Right? There's inequality in the world, there's disease, there's starvation, there's, as Jesse pointed out, genocidal massacres in places in Africa, and Harada has the ability to stop that. And if I'm not willing to let Harada possibly harm a few people, again, maybe it comes down to, look at, these people are being harmed through Harada's inaction. So, wow, food for thought. I'm not changing, but it's certainly an interesting concept. And again, I go back to just praising Joshua Dysart for really bringing the character of Toyo Harada in this second go-round of Valiant up to such a level where we can talk about him for, you know, nearly an hour and not come to a consensus and find him such a completely fascinating character. It's amazing. It's a credit to Joshua Dysart and all the people over there at Valiant who have allowed Joshua to do that. You know, Warren Simons, the editor in chief, who or executive editor, whatever his title is over there, that brought, you know, Josh in. Josh wasn't exactly, you know, a household name in the comic industry, but Warren knew that he could bring something special to this Harbinger corner of the Valiant universe. So kudos to them. And as I mentioned, there is a new series coming out. I think it's scheduled to come out in 2019. And I think it's going to be the kind of the period on the end of the sentence for Joshua Dysart's story, for his because really Harbinger, you know, you have the Renegades, you have, you know, the characters he introduced in Imperium, like Sunlight on Snow, who's really a fan favorite. But really, from the beginning, more than Pete Sanchek, more than anyone else, really the story of Harbinger is the story of Toyo Harada. So I think this new series that's scheduled to come out in 2019, as I said, is really going to be the period on the end of the sentence for Josh. And I find it very interesting because clearly he's not – well, I mean, I say clearly, but what do I really know? I can't imagine him killing Toyo Harada. But, you know, I'm very much looking forward to it. It's the life and death of Toyo Harada. So, you know, maybe it will end with his death. I'm just not sure. But I really can't wait for it. I can't wait to see what Joshua Dysart has left to say about this character because Imperium ended a while ago. And we really haven't – no one at Valiant, none of the creators have really kind of picked up the ball from Josh and let us know exactly what's going on with Toyo. So I'm very much looking forward to where this series takes us. You know, life and death of Toyo Harada. Will it really end in his death? I don't know. You know, he's such an iconic character and such a huge part of Valiant. I have my reservations that it would end in his death. But at the same time, if this is Joshua Dysart's last work at Valiant, it's almost like I don't want – he's done such a great job with the character. I almost don't want anyone else to get their hands on him and screw him up. But, you know, that's just me being selfish because there's plenty of other great writers and creators who could do a great job with Toyo, I'm sure. So, I don't want to sell them short, but I definitely am looking forward to this. What are your thoughts on the upcoming series, Manny?
You know, he probably has such a close relationship with writing that character that I agree with you. He may not want anybody else touching it. But for me, as a fan of the character, I would hate to see this being the last time we see Toyo Harada. But this could be the icing on the cake where we can really... Actually, I don't think so. I don't think we'll ever be able to definitively, you know, like, he was this all along. Or, you know, I don't think so. You know, it'll be interesting. It'll be great because I love the character. But, I would never like to see him go.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows how final or how far along in the process Josh is, because as I said, 2019, I mean, that's a long time from now. So I'm sure we'll get more details as it comes closer. What are your thoughts on the new series announcement, Jesse?
Oh, I'm heavily excited about it. I obviously have read everything from, you know, 90 all the way up to include Nintendo books. But specifically Imperium, I would say Imperium has been my favorite title, and I don't feel that Imperium ended the way it was intended to end. So I actually look, even without knowing anything about what Josh intends, I look at this upcoming series as the continuation of Imperium.
Yeah, because it hasn't even been mentioned at all how many issues. And again, it's so early in the process, Josh himself may not even know.
Right, right. And, it could actually be a big play on words. Perhaps the death of Toyo Harada is actually Josh's departure from the character.
Right, exactly.
You know, all you need is some other newly hired writer to take over. Not saying that they're on good writers out there, but you take the wrong writer out there who doesn't fully understand the character, doesn't know the character, doesn't feel the character, get the character. And then now you have a mustache-twirling Dr. Claw, you know, who's saying, get the gold and use the laser, you know, and like, you know, now you really do have a dead character because he's not the same character he once was.
So really, actually talked to Josh just a little while ago, and the death of Harada is, he decides to go hang out with Pete, drink booze, take pills, and walk along the bottom of the river. Fake his own death.
That would be it too, right there. You know,
just to mention it's a six, part, series.
Oh, is it? Did they announce that in the Vulture? Because I didn't.
Yeah,
see
it's
it.
A six part series.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's good. That means that there'll be about 15 variants for the first issue, and about 8 for each subsequent issue. So I could probably collect all of them, all like 40 or so.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it too, and I'm looking forward to the next time I see Josh, maybe at WonderCon in Anaheim in a few weeks. And I'll have to pick his brain about it. That'll probably have to be off the record. Sorry, listeners. Okay, I think that's going to wrap it up. You know, we are over an hour here talking about this character, which is, you know, spectacular. Again, kudos to Joshua Dysart and all the people over there at Valiant involved with bringing this character back. It easily could have gone the other way with bringing back this hero who had this villain or this character, I should say. We don't know that we answered the questions definitively whether he's a hero or a villain. But bringing this character back from the first iteration of Valiant, it could have gone the other way. He could have been, you know, much more two-dimensional, even more so than he was the first go-round or just an afterthought. And instead, he's become, to me, one of the most interesting, if not the most interesting characters in the Valiant universe. So again, I encourage you, if you haven't read Toyo Harada's story, go and read Harbinger 25, 1 through 25. Read Harbinger Omegas, read Imperium. It's an incredible story. Oftentimes when people come to me and they ask, hey, I want to start reading comics, I want something that's good that I can get into, one of the first series I recommend is Harbinger 1 through 25. I think it's an easy, a lot of the story itself is easy to grasp. It's easy to understand. You don't have to have all kinds of history with the characters and all this backstory like some people feel they need with, you know, Batman or Spider-Man or any of that kind of stuff. So if you haven't read it, I very much encourage you, go and check it out. It's a great story, and Toyo Harada, although in my mind is a villain, is still an incredibly interesting character. Anything else you want to say about Harada, Manny?
No, I think we've covered everything. Just I am a witness to that. That's one of the first series that you gave to me years and years ago, and that's what got me hooked on Valiant. So yeah, definitely read if you haven't read it, read Harbinger 1 through 25, and have your life changed forever.
All right, and I want to thank you for joining us, Jesse. Anytime you want to come on for a Valiant Sunday episode, like I said at the top of the episode, right at the beginning, I consider you an expert on Valiant, so you're always more than welcome. But is there anything else you think we should share with the listeners about Harada?
No, you guys have, we've more than beat this one into the ground. I strongly advise, readers to go out and check out Harbinger 1 through 25. And I would throw an Imperium in that. It's impossible to read that, especially if you have the foundation from Harbinger 1 through 25. It's impossible to read Imperium and not say, God, dog, man, this is good stuff. Because it is.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think, as I said, Harbinger 1 through 25, the Harbinger Omegas 1 through 3, and then Imperium 1 through 16, it's all really one long story. It's all talking about Harada and such an interesting character. And we have talked about Harada for more than an hour, but the great thing is we've come to no consensus. We still don't necessarily have answers. We still don't completely understand the motivations of the character. And what's so great. That's what makes him so realistic. It's almost like he's an actual person. So it's just great. I love the fact that this character exists. And I love the fact that we're going to get at least 6 more issues of Harada's story in the life and death of Toyo Harada in 2019. So I'd like to thank all you listeners for joining us. Don't forget to go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date when new episodes drop and all our convention coverage. Don't forget that all our content has migrated over to lrmonline.com going forward. And while you're over there, be sure and check out LRM coverage on TVs, movies, video games, pretty much anything pop culture. It's all over there for your enjoyment. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.